Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff. Hi Chris, how are you doing?
I'm slightly under the weather, but all the better for seeing you two. That's made me feel a lot better.
Were you wearing a nice bright, is that a Hellas Verona?
Hellas Verona, yeah.
I think you've been hugging too many dodgy podcast hosts, Chris.
I have indeed, yeah. Present company included.
Yeah, how are you feeling, George? Are you under the weather or are you over the weather?
I'm basking in the light of a triumphant podcast mashup featuring us and True Faith, which we did at Gosford Civic Theatre on Monday night. What a great time we had, apart from making Chris ill.
Who won, do you reckon, out of the two shows?
I think, in factual terms,
it was a 0-0 draw, wasn't it?
I mean, overall, it was a 0-0, but I'm afraid it then did go to extra time and penalty. So if I could be Steve Bruce, we didn't lose the match. It was a draw.
Technically.
But then we've gone out on penalties because True Faith won the brilliantly conceived Would Why I Lie to You round. And sadly, our lying wasn't as good.
Yeah, sadly my story was so ridiculous that actually it...
That it could only be true.
It could only be true, yeah.
To cut a long story short, the end, to cut it slightly longer than that, we had to do this, you know, unbelievable truth, whatever. And it was Chris's, I don't want to go into the details because I want to leave it hanging for our listeners, but Chris presented Rafa Benitez with a bag of ham and some peas pudding, and that's all you need to know. And that was true.
Yes, that is really something. I'm expecting the cease and desist letter through the post from the BBC any day now to stop us from ever doing that again. Thank God. Right then, coming up in this week's show, we're talking PIF as well as Piffle, Newcastle's first big acquisition of the summer, and asking whether the team can sign off with a win. But first, headlines, chaps, in 30 seconds or less. Get the stadium off the ground. Famously skinned PIF are looking for investors, George.
Yes, news has come out. Firstly, through Reuters, we have stood that up at The Athletic, that PIF, Newcastle's majority owners, are open to selling a stake in the club to outside investors, which would be used to help fund infrastructure projects. There's a lot to unpick there and get through, so we were going to do that in the first bit of the show.
Terrace Whispers, Newcastle buy up Leeser's properties. But what does it mean, Chris?
I mean, what does Terrace Whispers mean? That's a terrible...
I don't know.
That's absolutely terrible, is it? But yes, Newcastle have bought up Leeser's Terrace, the Grade 1 listed Georgian buildings just behind the East Stand, spent between £20 and £25 million on it. A lot of speculation subsequently that means Newcastle will be looking to expand St James's Park. Not anywhere near as cut and dry as that, but it does definitely have stadium future question in mind in terms of why Newcastle have bought that.
No trips, and now no trips. A lovely little spelling joke there, George. Well done. Newcastle won't be competing in Europe next season after Chelsea beat Spurs.
Thank you. By the way, Terrace Whispers was originally Terrace Chatter, which I think is a phrase, so that did make sense, and now it doesn't. And now I've eaten into my 30 seconds on no Europe. Basically, Newcastle United can no longer qualify for Europe.
Good, there we go, that's that sorted. And Saints pay for their sins. More derbies incoming after EFL chuck Southampton out of the playoffs. I mean, Hull is a bit of a stretch as a derby, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, I mean, my concern with answering this one is it could be out of date by the time that the podcast goes out, because Southampton are almost certainly going to appeal the fact that they have been thrown out of the playoff final due to alleged spying. Well, it seems that they've been found guilty of that spying against Middlesbrough. And so Middlesbrough face Hull as things stand on Saturday in the Championship playoff final. But all of that is with very much an asterisk. And Hull is definitely not a derby.
Do you say asterisk? Did he say asterisk?
Did you?
Did I? Maybe
asterisk.
Did you? Asterisk. Do you say asterisk?
Yeah. Did I?
Well, it's an asterisk.
Asterisk.
Asterix is a famous potion-sipping Gaul who would, with his mate Obelix, would then beat up Romans.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's potato-potato.
Well, that was just...
potato-potato. I do Asterix. Love that they've called this spying, by the way, which I always presumed was like James Bond gadgets, you know, stealing the microfilm from the Russians, where in fact it's a man behind a tree with some binoculars.
And an iPhone.
And an iPhone, yeah.
Having gone to the golf club next door.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on, chaps. Apparently PIF are open to a minority stake sale, George. Why? Question mark.
Well, that's a good question. And it feeds into sort of a lot of talk around the club that's been around, you know, not just now, but has sort of been there. I mean, really, since not long after the takeover, which speaks about sort of how committed the majority owners are to Newcastle, what's going on, do they really want to invest? So what's happened is a story has appeared that they are open to selling a minority stake in the club. Now, why would they want to do that? From their perspective, from PIF's perspective, they would say that this is not initiated from them, that this has come from outside parties, from other parties, and that they're listening to what this might mean. Part of the bigger picture is that football remains a attractive investment to lots and lots of people. So therefore, there are people who want to get a foothold into the Premier League in particular. They're listening to this idea. It's nothing is cast in stone, nothing is definitive. Why would they be open to bringing more money in? Well, because Newcastle have two, and in particular one very big infrastructure project ahead of them. And that, of course, is the stadium as well as the training ground. And at some point, somebody has to find a way of pushing the button on what happens next. And once they've decided what happens next, how they pay for it. I think there has been a misunderstanding about PIF from day one, which is that this is only a vanity project for them, that it's about getting a seat at the Premier League table and all that kind of thing. It's an investment. They want to get their money back and more when they eventually leave the club. They have never been an ownership which is just going to press the button on £1 billion plus for a new stadium. That was always going to have to be paid for somehow, by debt, by financing, whatever. And that the idea is that if they bring in a chunk of money by selling 10%, 15%, whatever, of the club, this could bring them the equity that they could get the ball rolling with for a stadium. That's the best I can do at trying to explain that in a hopefully not too complicated way.
When you say push the button, who has the button? What is this button? Like,
okay. So now you're being Mr. Asterisk. Oh, Asterix.
It's the big stadium button, Chris. They have it in a briefcase. Yeah.
Yes. So it's a bit like there's a bat phone. Like Batman has the bat phone. Commissioner Gordon has the bat phone. But we know that we know that Newcastle have been in positions before where they've had proof of concepts and designs and like lovely glossy DVDs that everyone has kind of watched and got very emotional about what they could do with a new stadium or St James's Park. And what they've not been able to do, to use that phrase again, is push the button, is to get a decision made and then start acting on it. I think Chris should come in and talk about the club perspective as opposed to the PIF perspective. But this whole idea of infrastructure, of stadium, training ground, it needs action. And I think this is seen as a way of actually getting the ball moving on something that is vitally important. It's important to the club. It's important to bring money in. It's important, as we've said repeatedly, to Eddie Howe or whoever the manager is, to be able to say to his players, here's progress. It's important, of course, to fans who want to get in and see their team play too.
A lot of this chat on this podcast, including the next section, is going to be about stadium, and I know that that will annoy supporters because it feels like that it's talked about a lot is written about it, and nothing has actually happened. And I think, although this isn't Newcastle announcing what they are doing with the stadium project, I do think it at least moves things forward, because the view that David Hopkinson, the chief executive, has had basically since he's arrived is that Newcastle have done a lot of feasibility studies and talking about ideas, prospective plans that may or may not happen, which needed to be done. Newcastle needed to conduct a lot of that research. But when previously we've had timescales which have come and gone, imminent, early 2025, all of the ones we've discussed previously, they did just come and go. And it felt like certainly when something went up to ownership, at least externally, the way that it feels, that it would go to ownership and then just nothing would ever really happen. You know, these are the hurdles and it's just discussed.
Yeah.
Whereas this is an attempt to actually move things forward. If Newcastle are going to either extend and rebuild part of St. James's Park, or, as we are led to understand, has been the preference for a long while of several senior figures within the club, move to a new stadium next door, they need to find a way to finance that. And rather than just it be a theory, where's that money going to come from? This is something which has been, I think, was suggested towards PIF as to, well, why don't you look for inward investment? And if the people who want that inward investment believe that, rather than just it being that they're going to finance part of the stadium or the like, they also want a stake in the club, theoretically the club itself can then grow in value moving forward. Because until Newcastle have the infrastructure that they need and require, they have grown massively in terms of how much they're valued since the takeover, but they're not going to reach the potential of several billion pounds, up to 5 billion is what some insiders think it could be worth, unless they actually have these projects. So PIF, yes, could retain a higher stake, but a higher stake in less. Could they take a slightly lesser stake in something which is worth a lot more, and so in time will be worth a lot more for them for their investment? So it's an attempt to try and kick things on a little bit to make sure that when the potential funding is there, right, Newcastle can actually do this. They don't need a new stadium is going to cost upwards of £1 billion. They don't need £1 billion right here, right now, but they need the down payments on a lot of that. And they're still going to borrow. There's still going to be bits that they're going to have to take there. PIF themselves aren't going to pay for all of that. And this is an attempt to sort of get around this, which is sort of almost a compromise between all parties, so that it feels like all parties can sort of win from it to a certain degree.
Judging by the social media reactions to this sort of thing, George, I think some fans are kind of worried about PIF and their commitment to Newcastle United, and some have seen this as another sign that they're wanting out of the club or on their way out of the club. What would you say to that?
Well, it's not so much what I would say. What they would say is that is not right. That they remain fully committed. I think it is. You know, it is about what that commitment actually sort of looks like.
Yeah.
I think all of us had this idea that when the takeover happened, you know, they were going to throw money at it, and, you know, if not into the team, because they couldn't do that. And, you know, don't want to rewrite history. They talked about kind of incremental investment into the first team and things like that. And that, they said from day one it was an investment. But there was also sort of word about investing around the city. You know, during Amanda Staveley's time, there was talk about affordable housing and projects like that. And those things have kind of never materialized. And there was this feeling a couple of years ago, perhaps, maybe even a bit longer, that PIF everywhere around the world were withdrawing their investment, or that they were focusing their investments much more internally. They have their own 2030 vision. And there was huge frustration around the club at the time that they just couldn't get things done. They couldn't get these big ticket items signed off. You know, we're still awaiting kind of we're still awaiting ground to be broken on a new training ground. Now, when Amanda Staveley was here, they had narrowed down their potential sites to 3 or 4 places. You know, we're really thinking very, very seriously about where it might be. And then suddenly we're hearing that it's like back to square one. It's been similar with the stadium. You know, if you talk to the club, they'll say, oh, no, you know, this is, you know, we're taking our time. We have to get this right, which is definitely true. But there has been this huge irritation, frustration that these big things have been kicked down the road. So this is not a new thing. And it, as Chris says, I think it's an attempt by the club, at least partially, to try and get the ownership engaged and moving. When we see these Matfern Hall meetings, there's always a sense of like urgency, and it's great to have them here. Yeah, they're fully engaged. They really want to do it. But actually, Newcastle are being left more or less to sort themselves out. They're not being given multi-million pound sponsorship deals from Saudi. I mean, they are the odd one, but it's not going to be funded by Saudi. This is about the club in a way shaping its own future with PIF's involvement, with PIF putting money in when necessary, but they are not this huge, great, big benefactor that some of us perhaps thought they might be.
How does this affect the Rubens, Chris? Are they stepping back at all?
We're not led to believe so, no. I mean, Jamie Rubin is very active as the representative from the Rubin family on the board, and he was involved in a lot of transfer discussions last summer. He was at Matfern Hall. isn't at as many games now because he's based in New York quite a lot, but he is someone who regularly is involved in almost, not quite day-to-day discussions, but all the sort of big talks moving forward. And so it's not that they would be stepping back entirely, although at some stage, just like PIF in the future, at some stage, maybe they do want to return the money. But that's not the idea necessarily here. This is to bring a sort of another partner on board. And you have to remember that the Rubens themselves own a lot of real estate in Newcastle and are heavily involved in the construction industry, so having their expertise moving forward for whatever Newcastle decide to do with the stadium feels important as well.
One thing that we've not considered in this conversation is what the motivation would be for any potential investors coming in. I mean, okay, hand over a big chunk of money, here's 20% of the club, 25% of the club, for example. Would they just be sitting on that investment? You know, presumably whoever that is would be given a seat on the board, would want a seat on the board. They might have their own motivations about wanting to take full control of the club. So that thing, you know, that dynamic could change. That often happens. People take a minority stake in a business and then look to take on full control. So, you know, us talking about what PIF want or what the club want isn't necessarily the same thing as what an investor coming in might be thinking long term. So all those things then, you know, do go up in the air. I'm interested to know, Taylor, sort of how you feel. Like, we're connected to the club. We don't get to speak to PIF very often. They have engaged on this story and said that it's right. But, you know, you as a fan, you as someone who loves the club, sort of how you feel about the ownership as an entity, you know, and their running of the club.
Yeah, I mean, there was at the start when the takeover first happened, I think there was a lot of internal kind of wrestling that went on with regards to PIF, because we all know what it is, we all know where they are from, and the various questions that have come along with that. I found it really difficult to sort of square that with my own sort of feelings on, you know, obviously the human rights stuff and all that. It took a long time for that to feel.
To get to grips with that, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The thing I worry about really with PIF is that they're such a massive, wide-ranging organisation. They've got so many things on their desk that I worry Newcastle United are a column on a spreadsheet. They're in the bottom drawer of the desk, for want of a better expression, you know, with all the lumps of blue tack and the fucking old post-it notes and stuff. And that, you know, I just worry that Newcastle aren't a priority. Why would they be? I guess, you know, their business interests are massive and wide ranging. I worry that they don't have they're not worried about us until it comes around the time of the year when they have to fly over and go to Matvin Hall for a lovely chat and a cup of tea. Then, you know, suddenly, oh yeah, we're very engaged. We're very worried. We're interested in all this, but I want to see it. I want to see it. I want evidence. We've waited so long for these big decisions to happen, and I feel like they get kicked down the road, and then we get another 6-8 months down the road and get kicked further down the road again. And I get that these are not straightforward projects and these are once in a lifetime decisions that have to be get those decisions right. But I need something to grab onto, George. I need something to hold onto as a fan, because if I don't see it, I find it really hard to believe in it, you know?
Just to add to all of what George said earlier, in terms of timescales, we're not expecting that in the next week or two that suddenly there's going to be this announcement that there's investment. I mean, it could progress in that way, but basically at the minute it's all very tentative, and in some ways I think the news coming out may actually, I'm sure some people around Newcastle hope that actually brings in more potential interest, that now it's known that maybe they would be open to that, and it's sort of... there's no set. They're already in fully locked negotiations, and someone's just going to arrive in the course of the next few weeks. Hopefully, we get developments over the next weeks and months. But you also have to remember this is PIF, and given everything that's happened at Newcastle United so far, things rarely move that quickly. So I imagine those negotiations will be quite painstaking.
Yep. Join us in 10 years' time for the next update.
Stadium update. Excellent. Right. Okay. Let's move on a similar sort of topic, actually. To repeat. Why, when we come to the Leasers Terrace purchase, Chris, why did this happen?
So this is a story I've been working on for a few weeks, and it finally came out yesterday, is that yeah, Newcastle have bought the majority of the Grade 1 listed Leasers Terrace, which is located behind the East Stand. They've spent in the region of £20 to £25 million, we're led to believe, on this. And so it's Leasers Terrace is like a sort of enclosed looped crescent almost. So there's a part that directly faces St. James's. There's two sides of it which face part of Leasers Park, one of which faces just the main part of the park, the other which faces the tennis court. And then there's also a smaller other section which faces St. James's Terrace. Newcastle have bought all of the western, northern and southern parts, which are the parts which overlook all the parts that overlook St. James's, they have bought, plus some of the east side, which is the bit that overlooks the tennis court, although some of that remains private. At the minute, they are largely student accommodation or accommodation which is rented out, and that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. The current management company is going to remain in place. But the reason why Newcastle, there's a few reasons why Newcastle have bought it, and largely it's the word that is used internally, and this is a very business term, which is becoming common lexicon now with things that Newcastle do, optionality is the word which we keep hearing. And basically by that is the immediate assumption a lot of people make, understandably, when I was first told, this was my first thought leaps towards this, is that Newcastle are going to extend the East Stand, they're going to stay, and that's what they're going to do. Now, that is theoretically at least slightly more plausible because Newcastle have done this, because one of the issues they would have, because they're Grade 1 listed, those buildings cannot be demolished, and Newcastle intend to preserve them. They insist they intend to preserve them. They have to, by law. Speaking personally, I've always thought that actually that is important, as much as it'd be great to see St. James's Park. It is important local architecture, which have been there since the 1830s, I think it is. But what you also have as an owner of those buildings is something which is, among other rights, something called a right to light. If Newcastle were to extend the East Stand upwards and sideways, then that would become more restrictive in terms of the light which could get into those buildings for people living there day to day. If Newcastle own those buildings, then that right, being opposing that right to light is easier because Newcastle own it. So the people who are actually going to potentially have their light affected, that's not so much of an issue. So it does give them that option. But also, if Newcastle build a new stadium, it gives them access to that road more easily, as to if you're going to build just nearby on Leasers Park, as we are led to believe they like to, also to build the on the current stadium. And potentially Newcastle hope that if they were to build next door, and then whatever happens with St. James's Park, this gives them slightly more say in what may happen with a repurposed St. James's Park, as it turned to parkland, as it turned to something else, because they are part of the group of people who now overlook that area as well. Does that give them a greater say on that? So there is also a financial benefit, they believe, particularly from UEFA perspective, which I'll come on to in a little bit. But essentially, again, this moves things slightly further forward, with potential for the stadium question being answered, but not necessarily which way Newcastle are definitely going to go.
Chris, this it's been described as a very David Hopkinson move, this.
Yes, that's the way I would describe it. And maybe this is me giving him for this idea slightly too much credit, because I don't know the full sort of genesis of it. And Brad Miller, the chief operating officer, is the one who will have done a lot of the groundwork for this. He's the person who's in charge of infrastructure and the sort of stadium question. And lots of other people behind the scenes have done a lot of work in it as well. But the fact that it's actually happened feels very Hopkinson driven. And when we were talking before about the potential for investment, minority investment coming into the club, what Hopkinson has at least tried to do, or seems to be trying to do in Newcastle, is rather than these issues just being talked about, it's like, well, Leasers Terrace is an issue, but can we bring that issue almost more in-house? Let's just go and buy it. Let's actually do that. And then it doesn't completely remove that hurdle. But it's being proactive, a word George hears, proactively trying to get ahead of the of this issue, and at least bring it in-house. And then they can deal with that moving forward. But it's the message from people inside the club is that this, again, when we were talking before about feasibility, about potential options for a stadium, before everything has been theoretical. Now it's about trying to put things in place so that actual plans are possible. And this is one step towards that on either solution. I still think Newcastle will go down New Stadium, would like to go down New Stadium. But they think that this gives them options on both fronts. And going out and actively buying it, rather than just being like, oh, we'll have to discuss with the people who currently own Leasers Terrace, they now own the majority of that. And and in that sense, it gives them at least slightly more control over it.
Yeah, I think this also takes us back to the first section, really, about outside investment and things like this. You know, that sort of David Hopkinson element, that David Hopkinson question, it's like, He doesn't want to hear people say no. He like wants to, it's like, okay, well, we can do this, we can do that. Yeah, but what are we doing? What are we doing? What can we do? Let's do it. And so there is very much this sort of sense of urgency now, I think, around the, certainly around the club, maybe not in PIF, but around the club, like we've got to get going. So if this is a problem, I don't want to hear about problems, I want to hear about answers. It's that sort of energy that's happening. And, you know, Chris has made this point, whatever they do, it is going to be hellishly complicated. It's going to be controversial for one reason or the other. It's going to be difficult. There's no easy solution to what they're doing. But by doing this, it takes one bit of the problem away and it shows they're moving. It gives, you know, it gives evidence that the club are taking this seriously and are trying to do things. And that is, you know, that is important. So I think if you put these two things together, you are given a sense of what Hopkinson is trying to do at the top of the club, which is actually sort of like, you know, sort of circling around these issues. And it's like, we're never making any progress. Oh, here's a plan. That looks nice. It's like, okay, let's do something, guys. Let's do something. And so this is very much part of that.
And Chris, you mentioned before that there may be other financial benefits with this decision. What are those benefits?
Well, as we well know, Newcastle are in discussions with UEFA at the minute over a likely fine for breaching UEFA financial fair play regulations. And moving forward, they need to increase revenues in all ways. And although I think there would be SCR, squad cost rule benefits, domestically in the Premier League from this, more importantly, UEFA-wise moving forward, the outlay that Newcastle make buying the Leeds Terrace through a subsidiary company, that actual financial infrastructure investment doesn't count against them financially, but the revenue that they will bring in from the student lets, from letting them out, does positively count towards PSR or SCRs. It's going to be in the same way that Stack brings in benefits financially. So the capital investment isn't negatively, it doesn't affect them negatively, but the actual revenue they bring in, even if it's not going to be millions and millions of pounds every year, it's still of a benefit there. So it should aid with that calculation. And I mean, it was interesting because when we were discussing in the first bit about potential inward investment, obviously Newcastle sold St. James's Park to a subsidiary company, to themselves essentially, in the later transfer accounts. That's what we saw they did last season, which as theoretically they argued was rather than just for PSR reasons, there was a big PSR benefit, but rather than for that, it was to try and bring in inward investment and to use that as a vehicle to raise money to potentially finance infrastructure projects. But while that benefited Newcastle from a Premier League PSR perspective, that just does not count towards UEFA accounts. So that's part of the reason, right, why Newcastle failed in that regard, is that they can't use that 130-odd million pound profit, I think it was, for UEFA. So yes, this is not going to suddenly shift the dial and mean that Newcastle can go and sign a 50-goal-a-season centre-forward this summer because they're now getting rent in from Leeds Terrace. But they will get some financial benefits.
I was going to say, it's interesting, isn't it, that football clubs now also have to be student landlords and also pub landlords as well, if we're including the Stack in that. Maybe we should buy some ice cream vans and a chip shop as well, and we'll, you know, expand. Could be a whole empire.
Dear Eddie Howe, my Venetian blind needs fixed.
Yes. I am writing to you again, David Hopkinson, with regards to the issue of black mould around my bathroom. Please sort it out.
Yeah, very weird.
Right then, chaps, Fulham away, last game of the season. George, can NUFC go out with a bang?
Well, I'll be there to find out.
Are you going on the flotilla, or are you part of that? Or?
I'm going on the flotilla, yeah. I'm getting tanked up, massively tanked up. I'm going to take my top off. I'm going to do those like big slides down the... I really want to do that. It's like every year this comes up. Why do Newcastle finish every single season?
How can we always? Yeah, Fulham. Always. Fulham.
Is that the case, Chris?
A lot of them have been. I think the last four away trips in general at the end of a Premier League season have been in London, and a couple of them have been at Fulham, yeah. So
it's Rafa's last game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the 1-4-0. Yep.
Sick of playing Man United on Boxing Day as well. That can fuck off this year.
Yeah, that always happens. We'll see, won't we? But I mean, I think after the way they played against West Ham, with admittedly against an absolutely horrific team, but they played with great confidence. They played with belief. They played with energy. It was all the things you'd want to see from a Newcastle team. Obviously, it no longer matters. But very impressed with how they did that. Bearing in mind, it didn't matter, and so you would like to think that they could sign off in a bit of style, and maybe this is finally Newcastle's streaky run. It's just come at the wrong bit of at the wrong bit of the season.
So they could go out with a bang, Chris. Might they go out without a flash?
Gordon, yes, I get that. Very clever, Ollie. Very clever, but I can't see how Anthony Gordon can play unless Howe decides that he gives them a couple of minutes at the end as a sort of send off. The fact that he's been involved in the last three or four matchday squads and hasn't come on for a single minute, the slightly awkward feeling that there was after the game at the weekend that George and I talked about on the matchday podcast, that he sort of seemed to stand back a little bit, which I thought was respectful in many ways. He didn't make it about himself, so in that regard, I have a lot of respect for the way that he tried to do that. But it did feel a bit awkward, just like he was like skulking off, and that this is the into the shadows, and he wasn't sort of going to get this same send off. Not that it would have been the same as for Kieran Trippier, but clearly Newcastle have not been. Clearly Newcastle A, don't want him to get injured, I think, so that would potentially scupper any or affect any potential deal this summer. And Howard said a few weeks ago that he wants players who are fully committed to the club. Now, those close to Gordon insist that he would play, and that he hasn't sort of asked to leave per se, even though the expectation is that he will. But clearly Howe, as he keeps talking about the future, and the future looks like it's not going to be with Anthony Gordon. So no, I certainly don't see him being the starting 11, and I'd be surprised even if he comes off the bench.
Highest possible finishing position now, George, is ninth, so there will be no European football next season. How do we feel about that?
Well, not surprised.
No.
But yes, so Chelsea beating Spurs on Tuesday night means that is the highest position they can finish in, so thereby meaning that the Conference League is out of reach. They starting this season, getting back into Europe was sort of a minimum expectation. I thought it was, or minimum target, in spite of the difficulties of the summer. I thought it was interesting when I spoke to Dan Byrne recently. Obviously, that interview is on our Extra Time service. But he talked about at the start of the season, Newcastle players actually targeting being the first Newcastle team to get into the Champions League back-to-back and back-to-back seasons. I mean, that was a very ambitious target, bearing in mind what happened. But they've been a way off that. I mean, I would feel slightly better about life if Newcastle managed somehow to scrape into the top 10. I think that would sort of look a bit less ugly from the team's perspective. A lack of Europe. I mean, at the moment, I feel quite relieved about a lack of Europe, just because I'm so knackered, just because, like everybody else, I'm knackered and there's been too many games. But like we as Newcastle, we as journalists, we as fans, we, as players, staff, Newcastle want to be in Europe season upon season. They have to get used to dealing with it.
Yes.
The Conference League, if that had been what it was, wouldn't have the same glamour. It wouldn't have the same prestige. But it would allow Newcastle to use a squad that certainly at the moment has shown itself is not capable of competing they've competed on four fronts, but they have not thrived on four fronts, certainly with the Premier League. Being in a quote-unquote lesser competition would have allowed Eddie Howe the ability to rotate his squad. You look at what other Premier League teams have done in Europe this season in the lesser competitions. English teams are in the finals. I mean, so I would have liked that. I think it would have been a chance for the manager, the club, the staff to get to grips with playing in Europe possibly a bit easier. And I think it would have been a competition they would have had an absolutely incredible chance of winning. So I'm sad about it, albeit at the moment I feel quite relieved.
Just for anyone who's looking at the Premier League table and can see that Newcastle are 3 points behind Chelsea and it's a 7-goal difference swing they would need to finish above Chelsea, and thinking, well, that means Newcastle theoretically could win 5-0 and Chelsea lose 3-0. Chelsea play Sunderland, who are 10th and above Newcastle, so that's why mathematically Newcastle can no longer get into European place, because they are guaranteed to at least if Chelsea get a point, obviously Newcastle can't finish above them. If Sunderland win, Newcastle can't catch Sunderland, so that's why they cannot get into European position.
Pedant's corner, but thank you for...
because some people may look at it and think it's just...
It's Operation Finish Above Sunderland now, isn't it? That's basically all we've got left this season, which is sad in its own way, isn't it? Let's be honest. Will this have an impact, Chris, on who they potentially can sign and who potentially goes?
I've said before, this was largely to do with if Newcastle got in the Champions League, that made more of a material difference, both from a financial perspective and also in terms of players wanting to come or potentially not wanting to leave. It's not the be-all and end-all. I think Anthony Gordon would probably still wanted or potentially would have gone. Sandro Tonali may still have wanted to have left regardless of, or to leave regardless of that. But so Newcastle have been working on the basis that could be in the Champions League for quite a while. Getting into Europe, they would have probably need greater depth, but not of the sort of top quality players you'd necessarily think. So it does affect things to a certain extent, but probably more important now is if Newcastle did finish 9th as opposed to finishing, I think is it low 13th they can finish, that is worth, I think it's $2.5 million roughly per Premier League position. That is substantial from what you can then do from a SCR perspective, because say if you have an extra $10 million from Premier League positions, £10 million can be spread over sort of 5 years on a contract, and then that could be worth a lot of money for what Newcastle could actually, he could sign a 45 million pound player on the basis of having that extra £10 million because it's spread over the length of the contract. And so that's more of a short-term effect that they've been working towards the current crop of players on there. Still slightly long list, but shorter list than previously for this summer for a little while now.
And are we expecting any more goodbyes, George, before we go for the season?
Well, Chris, he leaves on holiday for a week on Thursday, leaving me to do Fulham. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for all your efforts this season. Don't hurry back.
Bring us back something green.
Have I not got a flag?
Beyond that, we're still waiting to hear about Fabian Scher's position. We've said consistently that the expectation around the club is that he will be leaving at the end of his contract. We haven't had official confirmation of that yet. People like John Ruddy, we expect to go. Are you enjoying your cup of tea there, Chris?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, quite noisy China you have in your house. Emil Kraft, we know, is going. And then, of course, there's the, you know, people like Gordon who we expect to leave, but, you know, they have to get a bid.
Aaron Ramsdale
as well. And, you know, I think we'll be looking, won't we, at the final whistle to see who's saying goodbye. Again, people like Joe Willock, Jacob Murphy's been linked with a move away. I mean, it could be a lot of the people there. So we'll have to see.
How referenced four members of the playing staff and also backroom staff who are leaving after the West Ham game. So he mentioned Trippier, he mentioned Kraft, he mentioned Max Thompson, who's the son of Ray Thompson, the kit man, and a youth goalkeeper, has been there for a while. And he also mentioned Paul Katson, the doctor, who we'd spoken about previously, that he was likely to leave. But on just to pick up on George talking about Scher, he was not mentioned there. And the thing with Scher is the expectation for a long while has been that he will leave. And I still think there is a decent chance that he will. But that is when you talk about have Newcastle sort of changed their thinking going into the summer. Partly the centre-backs, the young centre-backs they're looking at, they need to make an assessment now as to can we sign them for a reasonable fee that we want. And also previously the thought was Fabian Scher wanted to be a starter at Newcastle and a consistent starter moving forward. If he has sort of changed his views and maybe that there can be a length of contract for a year or whatever that he sees as maybe being a more of a squad player moving forward, not guaranteed to start every week with Malik Chow being there, perhaps he does stay. I still think he probably will leave, but I think at least there's been a
chance.
They love him. They love him as a footballer. He still does things on the ball that no other player at Newcastle can do. And
very true.
In the games that he played this season, he played well. I mean, we've talked about sort of Malik Chow being an upgrade, but I'm not so sure about that in terms of quality. I mean, I think the way he's come into the team and been excellent and played, you know, 95 billion matches has been extraordinary. But I think if it's an upgrade, it's an incremental upgrade. It's not like the areas of the pitch where Newcastle needed a huge injection of quality. They definitely had to start thinking about the future, because of Cher's age and contractual situation. But I don't necessarily think he's done as a footballer. And I'm not rowing back on what we've said about the expectation of him going is. But I think another thing is, he does have leadership qualities. He's not part of the leadership group, but he's an experienced player, and Newcastle will already be losing a lot of experience this summer. So that's one thing to consider. The thing that Chris says is really important, because there has also been this sense that when he's not in the team, he can get quite grumpy. And, you know, this isn't, I'm not criticizing him, because I think he's a really fine player and one of the great stories of Newcastle post takeover. But like, they can't have people who may no longer be first choice hanging around the place with sourness in their attitude. And so if there has been a change to Cher's thinking that actually he could stay, be a bit more of a bit part player, but add something to the value of the squad, there is something there. What they can't have is a rump of disaffected players who bring a negative energy. So I think that is a crucial thing.
If he does go, and if he does retire from football maybe at some point, they are still looking for a new James Bond. So maybe it's time for a Swiss James Bond. What do we think? I think that might work.
James Bond market. Does that work as a joke? Okay. It's a kind of like
you might have to explain.
It's like a financial joke, and it's a financial joke, and Swiss is seen right. Switzerland yeah, okay. is seen as like a big banking.
Yeah, okay. Do we think there's a chance of a win at Fulham, Chris?
Yes, I do think there's a chance of a win. Newcastle have certainly picked up in the way that they've been playing. They have a decent record there, albeit lost and were terrible there last season in the early stages of the season. And Fulham themselves have done what I think Fulham, from someone who doesn't really cover Fulham, but have just have that outside perspective of they're always sort of almost threatening to get into Europe every season and then seem to collapse the last few games of it. So I think Newcastle have a decent chance of getting at least a point, but I think they win this one, which probably means they lose.
Fair play. Right then, the WSL and WSL2 awards took place this week as well. Everyone seemed to have a lovely old time. And we have to say congratulations to Jordan Nobbs, who was named in the WSL2 Team of the Season. Speaking of goodbyes as well, this week's Pod on the Tyne Extra Tyne, which is our content for subscribers, will be dedicated entirely to Kieran Trippier, with contributions from key figures in and around the club. Some big names involved, so please check that out at podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm. There's also an ad free tier to listen to the midweek and matchday shows without any commercials whatsoever, so get on that. Get in touch, email the show podonthetyne@gmail.com, give us a follow on Twitter X and Blue Sky @podonthetyne, and that, chaps, is just about that. Thank you very much, Chris.
You're very welcome. Yes, that this is me signing off before the end of season podcast that we will do, so I will not be there for Fulham. You and George are going to be doing the matchday pod, so I hope that goes well. I look forward to having that in my ears.
Dream team.
The Waldorf and Statler of football punditry.
I like that. I'll run with that. Grumpy and grumpier.
Call yourself a journalist.
Oh, yes. And if anybody is listening, wants to reply to me on social media, I have asked the question, Will Asula is ... I am writing about the Newcastle United centre forward enigma, man of mystery, Michael Jackson fan. So please reply to me with anecdotes, funny comments. Please don't call me a twat unless you really have to. But yeah, any contributions may be used in a athletic piece. So hit me up.
Taylor, what's your view on Will Asula?
On Will Asula in general?
Yeah. Will Asula is...
It's like opening a bag of puppy dogs, isn't it? He's just mental. It's like opening a bag of puppy greyhounds. That's what it's like. Fast as fuck and just going in every direction all at the same time. He's a lunatic.
Well,
I love him.
Please reply to me on Blue Sky.
You're okay. A twat. I'm not going to do that. Right then, thank you very much, everybody, for listening to Pod on the Tyne. Take care of yourselves. Have a lovely week. We shall speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.